Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. Today, we're joined by Carol Sawyer, the Vice President of Risk Management at Agile Financial Systems, as well as Mercator Advisor Group's own Director of Merchant Services, Don Apgar. We're going to open up with an overview of fraud risk protection and prevention, fraud management for merchants and agents, followed by an exploration of e-commerce in the age of pandemic, what is multi-layered fraud protection, and lastly, the intersection of fraud prevention and customer experience, and must there be trade-offs? Without further ado, let's get to the show.
So, Carol and Don, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on this episode of the Payments Journal podcast. And we're really going to be diving deep into one of my favorite topics within the payments industry, because it's always changing and always evolving. And that, of course, is fraud. So now, Carol, let's start with you here. So fraud is always, as I said, an interesting topic here on Payments Journal, because it is always evolving. So I think it's kind of really important here to have a bit of a state of the union about fraud. So maybe you could kind of unpack what the fraud landscape looks like from your perspective.
Thank you. Yes. So currently there's a global issue with fraud, right? The perps have literally moved to online primarily. So we're constantly challenging ourselves to look for risk filters and rules to apply to all our merchant services processing to make sure that we're protecting our merchants. Typically, the fraudsters are looking for ways to test cards. So you may hear some terms like phishing, card testing, hierarchy value errors. And it's because the fraud perps don't always know what type of business that they've infiltrated. So they're testing different MCC or SIC codes. They're trying to test and get authorizations to make sure that the stolen cards they have are still valuable. We just went to the MAC conference 2022 in Vegas, and they don't seem to be slowing down anytime soon. They're constantly evolving and getting smarter and smarter. So we need to do the same.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, it's that there's so many stolen credentials for sale on the dark web, especially after those major name brand data breaches a couple of years ago. And, you know, after the credentials sit around for a while, that's what the fraudsters have to do. They have to go test these credentials to make sure that they're still functional, you know, and being able to catch them in the testing phase is a key to preventing the actual fraud when they try to buy something, right?
Right, because once they have or know that the cards are active, typically what they'll try to do is run credits on those cards to steal the money. So here at Agile Financial Systems, we have 30 plus risk rules that run against all our merchants processing. We have a number of threshold controls that run behind the scenes, so it's seamless to the merchants, but they're there to protect them. For example, we have daily authorization thresholds so that if your typical merchant only processes, say, 50 transactions a day, we have a threshold set, say, at maybe 500. So if the fraud perps get in, they can only do so much damage, and then it absolutely stops them in the water.
Yeah, before EMV and chip cards became prevalent, fraudsters used to manufacture fake cards with these stolen credentials and go out to Wendy's and spend $6. That's how they would see if the card was good. But the chip cards have pretty much shut that down from a fraudster perspective. So now they have no choice but to use an e-commerce website to try to test cards.
Yes, the card not present or e-commerce online merchants are more susceptible to these types of fraud, but typically they're smart enough to know, or their web designers are smart enough to know, to put some controls on their website to mitigate that. They do velocity checks. They require address verification or AVS or CVV2, which is that, you know, secret code that's on the back of your credit card. So that cuts down on the ability of the fraudsters to test all the cards.
Yeah, I certainly think, you know, that there's a lot of really interesting things that were kind of unpacked there. First, you know, Carol, kind of starting at the top of what you'd said there in terms of just this global problem. I mean, I certainly have to agree with that. It really has become a global issue, you know, where you were kind of bringing up the card not present versus the card present fraud. And obviously EMV has done a lot to mitigate the card present fraud and, you know, kind of put that at bay for the most part here. But merchants as a whole have to look at this as a global problem because data can move all around the globe, meaning you can kind of have fraudsters have set themselves up very much like a business of, okay, this individual's a mule, this individual is going to be a tester, this company is going to do data analysis and data cleaning to make sure some of the data that they bought, how much of it is good, how much of it is not good anymore. Like, merchants themselves have to realize that fraudsters have become a business. It is no longer that lone wolf scenario that just sits in a basement all day and just kind of hacks away at different systems. It is very much a business in that they're looking for ROI in terms of, well, where can we see our profits if we've got got to purchase XYZ credentials. What is going to be our return on it? And I find that very fascinating. But I think it is really important to call out what you and Don were talking about there, which is really the elephant in the room. And that's kind of that we've seen e-commerce particularly explode in usage during the pandemic. And for some merchants, that's really kind of become their only means of commerce that they conduct in terms of a channel, because they can't have in-store or they don't have in-store anymore. They just move solely to e-commerce. So with that being said, what should merchants be aware of and what should they really be looking out for to protect themselves against this rise in fraud that we're seeing on the e-commerce side?
Well, I always recommend that on their website, they keep track and watch authorization data. It's not just the sales or the credits that are going through. It's the authorization log. These fraudsters, to your point, this is their full-time job. So they write codes, they write bots, and you'll see authorizations within seconds of each other. And it's boom, 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 boom. Those aren't valid sales. So I strongly encourage the card-not-present merchants to keep an eye on their authorization activity on their website. Many of them are very savvy to this, but to your point, a lot of them are new to the online space, don't really know that they should be looking for velocity, don't know that they should be looking for or requiring the ABS address verification and the CVV2, the code from the back of the card when they're making a sale. And they're strongly encouraged to do so because that's how the fraudsters test cards, and it's within seconds. And there's hundreds and hundreds of them because it's a bot. It's a code that they wrote.
Yeah, it's hard for the merchant to keep up with the sophistication that the fraudsters bring to the table now.
Right. And that's why here, you know, at our company at Agile Financial Systems, we do it for them. It runs seamlessly behind the scenes, so it's not impacting the merchant's processing activity, but we do keep thresholds in place to protect them. And then we have, you know, 30 plus risk rules that run behind the scenes to say, is this highly unusual? Does the merchant ever do this before? Why is this so high? You know, the average ticket is typically, you know, $25, and now I've got sales for $1,000. The other thing the fraudsters like to do is run round dollar amounts to get as much money as they possibly can, right? So if typically your product is, you know, $25.99 and you start seeing $1,000, $2,500, $1,500, and likely that's fraud. They're trying to get as much money as they can as fast as they can.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I'll take the card right up to whatever the available open to buy is, and then that's the credentials expired.
Right. So that's another reason we have rules around what credits they can run. You know, merchants, we have thresholds in there in place to stop excessive credits. You know, it could be valid and we reach out to the merchant and say, is this you? And they say, yes, thank you so much. Or they say, no, it's not. Please help me.
So but when you run these controls in the background, does that affect how the user experience? So, I mean, are you trying to weed out the fraudster? But what about the regular shopper? Do they see the impact of these things that you run in the background?
No, it should be seamless to the customers and the merchants, right? So we have all analytics in place and different rules, you know, keyed versus swiped. Does this merchant usually do swipe transactions and now all of a sudden they're moving to keyed? Is their average ticket, you know, normally $25 and then now today they have $5,000? So it's seamless to the customer or the cardholder, and usually it's seamless to the merchant. We can make an assessment and say, oh, this is standard for them, or, you know, we know that they're seasonal. For example, now we're going into spring. So a lot of your landscaping businesses are going to start to pick up, whereas before they didn't. So all that logic is behind the scenes in our risk organization. And we look at their previous processing history. We look at their typical processing. Does it make sense? And normally we're able to clear it and no one's the wiser.
That sounds like a tremendous amount of value that you guys bring to the merchants. Is that something you charge extra for?
We do not charge extra for my talents. Well, it's because it's a mutual relationship. We're here to protect the merchant and ourselves, right? It's a win-win for everyone. You know, I've had many merchants, you know, reach out to us to thank us so much for just watching behind the scenes. And a lot of times it's a mistake. It's, you know, a fat-fingered transaction and they meant to put in $100 and they put in $10,000. So we serve a purpose and most of the merchants are pretty grateful we're there.
Yeah, no, it certainly sounds like it.
Yeah, one of the things I kind of want to hone in on here, right, because you had brought up, Carol, kind of the 30 plus risk rules that kind of go behind the scenes, and you were talking a lot about your organization understanding the business and kind of the business model. You kind of put, hey, some of it's seasonal, and so, okay, you might start to see an uptick in volume of payments during this time and a slowdown during this time. And some of that kind of going to like, hey, there's the KYC and then there's also the KYB, so the know your customer and the know your business side of things here. But I think sometimes merchants take a look, and when we say the term fraud, they kind of think, okay, there's one type of fraud here. And the reality is it's, oh my word, just the names, the different ways and the vectors that fraudsters are looking at. And they're looking at things from every single angle they possibly can to, again, take a look and see how they can get an ROI from the systems that they're trying to put in place. So I think a lot of merchants take a look at fraud and say, hey, almost kind of like a personal computer, right? I install the one program and hey, you know what? Like, that's it. And I kind of look at that as a single layer approach when it comes to fraud. But really what we're seeing in the industry is that many suggest that a multi-layered approach to fraud really is the best. So I'd love to get from your perspective, what does a multi-layered fraud protection system mean, and how does all of that work?
Yeah, so thank you. That's a very good point. You do need a multi-layered system, especially if you're online. That goes back to having velocity filters. It goes back to the SIC code or the MCC code. So for example, if you're a restaurant, your SIC code is 5812. Well, then you shouldn't allow any authorizations or sales that are not under 5812. And there are a number of different tools out there that they can apply to their website to make sure that any transaction is coming through as the right MCC. And then you've got the address verification. You have the CVV2, which is that little code on the back of your card. You know, card present is slightly different than card not present. If you're a card present merchant, you really shouldn't allow, or you should ask your processor to turn off the internet functionality of your terminal. So what I mean by that is the SSL socket layer. If you're a face-to-face business, you don't need to have the internet open. And many merchants don't realize that they can have that closed by the processor. Now, an online merchant obviously needs it open, but there are multiple, you know, tools to use, going back to, you know, like velocity, MCC code. You'll see a lot of fraud on generic MCC codes in the authorization log. They like to use the SIC code or MCC code 5999. It's a generic miscellaneous code. And the card brands frown upon us really setting up true merchants with 5999 because it's a big favorite of the fraudsters.
Yeah, I can see where that would be problematic, you know, without having a specific business type. You know, how would you know if the transaction is appropriate or not?
Yeah, and I certainly agree. Like, I think it is very important for organizations such as yourself to be able to also articulate to merchants just the importance of understanding how fraudsters work, how they operate, and really showing them the breadth of how fraud has essentially evolved over the time. Because again, I really do think that some merchants take a look at it and they kind of go like, okay, yes, I know it is. And some of them take a look at fraud as just the cost of doing business. But the reality is that you can put tools in place that can help to minimize it. It shouldn't just be something of, well, it's gonna happen and I just have to learn to accept with it. No, there are things that you can do in a smart and efficient manner to be able to mitigate that as much as humanly possible, because especially nowadays where margins are razor thin for merchants, they need to be able to have systems and tools in place to be able to mitigate that and make sure that they retain on to as much of that profit as they possibly can. But I do want to dive a little bit further into something that you and Dawn were bringing up, and that is certainly the interesting dynamic between the consumer experience and the fraud prevention side of things. I think sometimes people get into the mindset of, okay, from a consumer experience side of things, we want to reduce all friction, which is certainly fantastic. That is certainly a great goal to have. And it's one of those of, okay, you just open up all the gates. Well, if you open up all the gates, that allows all the fraud to be able to come in. And if you lock everything down, then you don't allow for that flow. So it's kind of an interesting dichotomy that we've kind of got going on here. But Carol, from your perspective, how do you see these two elements really interacting with each other so that way then merchants can have the best of both worlds?
So what we did as far as, I just want to touch on the velocity threshold. Merchants get nervous when you bring up, oh, I'm going to put a cap on the amount of transactions you can do a day. But that's not what we do. We do a deep dive analytic on the history of the account, typically what they do on a business day. And then we build in a cushion, right? Because you're always going to have fluctuations in valid merchant processing. One day they're going to have 50 transactions. One day they're going to do 150. So you build in a little bit of a cushion so that there's a protection there or a safety net, but the merchant never even reaches that in his valid business. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, so we did a very large project and analysis of all of our merchants, and we're constantly tweaking those to fit the merchant's business valid processing. So whether it be the thresholds, whether it be the average ticket on the account, whether it be the monthly volume on the account, we're constantly adjusting those to meet the criteria of your valid merchant and their processing to make it as seamless as possible. But to make sure there's some safety net there for the merchant, if something goes haywire and they are a victim of fraud, that we're there to protect them.
Yeah, that's so key, Ryan, what you brought up before about friction in the transaction. It's, you know, that's the kind of the holy grail, especially in e-commerce, to try to make the transaction as easy as possible for the consumer to minimize cart abandonment and maximize conversion rates. And so, you know, those objectives are always at odds with fraud prevention, you know, and whatever fraud prevention solutions you implement, you always want those to run in the background and not be off-putting, if you will, to the consumer.
Right. So for our purposes here, our risk management team works the cardholder, the sales go through, but before we settle to the merchant is when it's scrubbed for all the data. So the cardholder experience is very positive. The merchant experience should be very positive too, unless there's some sort of outlier that we need to validate with the merchant. Otherwise, we're able to do our analysis behind the scenes and fund without delay. Another thing to note, we're always available 24/7. They can call, and within 30 seconds, customer service will typically answer the phone or get in touch with us. I think it's a good point that our agents are able to trust us with their business and their merchants, that we work cohesively with them, and we're here for the win-win.
No, it all sounds very efficient.
Now, Carol, one last question before we wrap things up here. I think when it certainly kind of comes to this fraud topic, a lot of merchants kind of ask themselves, okay, well, what can I do today? What can I do right now to help better protect myself? So do you have any kind of key takeaways that an individual who's listening to this and says, okay, how can I protect myself right now? Any insights or any things that you would recommend that individual does kind of today or in the very near future?
So in the card present environment, I would strongly encourage merchants to swipe or use the chip card versus keying transactions. There's too many issues with keying transactions. Also in card present, if it's say, you know, over a certain dollar amount, you may want to check the ID. Typically we recommend if it's over like $100 or it's out of the norm for your business, you may want to check their ID. Your online presence, your card not present, I strongly encourage watching that authorization log data. A lot of merchants don't pay attention to it, and that's truly where the fraud starts. Because once they test those cards and they know they're active, the next thing you'll see is either with your business or another business, they'll go use the cards and generally want to run credits to grab the cash quick. So watching your authorization log is key for card not present.
Excellent. Well, I think we'll end it on that positive note there. So Carol, Dawn, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about fraud and fraud protection. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.